What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find me on Twitter, NJH287, also on LinkedIn, where I post more content. Visit the website, dsmsports.net, for more content and episodes. And, of course, you can follow along with the podcast on your preferred podcast platform. Really, really awesome show for you guys today. I'm so excited for today's guest. Someone I've known for several years, perfect timing as well with school just starting out not that long ago. I'm going to be joined on the podcast today by Caleb Mezzi. He is assistant professor for sport management and business at Newman University. We hit on so many interesting subjects, talking about how he teaches his class, what he's learned from this young generation, talking about athletes transitioning from their sport, where he's done a lot of research and how they can build their brands and set themselves up for the transition from playing a sport, especially for those who, you know, don't make millions and tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars. Just so much good stuff coming up with this conversation with Caleb. We talk about social media strategy. You're really going to enjoy this. So stick around for that chat with Caleb. But first, just a little conversation about some of the things that stood out to me. I want to hone in on one area in particular, especially for the students, but really even for non-students, those who are, you know, want to get into the sports space, want to continue to grow their skills and their capabilities and their position in the sports space or beyond. And that is the idea of transferable skills. You know, Caleb talks a lot about this in our conversation coming up in just a moment about athletes transitioning from sports, whether they, you know, play in the minor leagues, play in the big leagues, play in college, how you can have those, identify those skills that can really help you excel in a quote unquote normal working job, you know, outside of the playing field. And I think students run into this a lot as well. I know I did early on in my career, coming out of school, coming out of college. Maybe you have perfect internships that translate perfectly to your dream entry-level job. Maybe you don't. Maybe you have worked for a few years out of college and you want to try to get into sports. Or maybe you played a sport for most of your life and you didn't have time to get internships and other jobs. Or, you know, maybe you were a minor league player or minor league athlete. Like Caleb has worked with in his life. And the idea of, that you are building up these really valuable skills throughout, that even if you were managing a restaurant in high school or in college, you still have, you know, leadership capabilities. You are doing project management. You are probably doing a little bit of numbers and strategy with those numbers. You might be helping out with marketing. You might be doing content creation. You might be doing social media strategy. You might be doing ad buying. There are so many things that come across your plate that you don't realize are really valuable skills that can come into play no matter what job you're trying to get into, and, you know, certainly in the sports space. So whether you are, you know, coming out of college, whether you are a student, whether you're just working that entry-level job, whether you're growing your own skill set at each position, that's the really important thing to think about. Is, yes, we're going to talk with Caleb about, you know, the importance of networking and chasing people, not jobs, is a really interesting point that he makes. But also the idea of making sure you're focusing on your skill development. No matter where you are, you can be developing skills that will serve you in any professional capacity. So listen up, because you are going to want to take notes. You're going to learn a ton from Caleb Mezzi, professor of sport management and business at Newman University. Back with today's guest, and I am so excited for today's guest. I have been lucky enough to know this guy and call him a friend for way too many years. We were just saying how old we both are getting, but this space will keep us young. My guest on the podcast today is Caleb Mezzi. He is assistant professor for sport management and business at Newman University. And welcome to the podcast today, Caleb.
Neil, I'm happy to be there. Like you said, we've known each other for quite some time. I have great memories, visual, of you eating a cheesesteak like a conehead. What do we eat? Cheesesteak when you came to Philly one time, way back when. I think it was Stephen App and Chris Cosmala, right? We were a couple of young bucks at that time. And yeah, I mean, we've kept in touch. We were one of the original social media and sports people on the Twitter.
No, I think, and we'll talk a little about this today, but Caleb and I are, it's a perfect, I think, manifestation of networking and building a network of people that aren't just like the old people that have jobs you want to have in 10 years, or vice versa, people that are young people that just coming out of school that want to pick your brain. Like, it's great to have someone like Caleb, like myself, who can kind of grow up in the space together and support each other and have great conversations over the years. And so I value having a friend like Caleb, and everyone listening to this podcast should be so lucky to have one as well.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that, if I can, I think it really emphasizes building relationships, because we've gotten to know each other outside of what we did. And I say what we did because I no longer really work in sport and social. But we've gone through these, like, ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys of our careers and like really contemplating back and forth with each other. Like, do I want to work for a team? Do I want to work for an agency? Do I want to do this? And like, we've had so many conversations and have stuck through this together where it's not like, oh, well, you went to academics, we're no longer going to talk. And this, the relationship really came to a personal thing. We've got to know one another, the teams we like, trash talk each other and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's the biggest part for me. That's been super fun.
Oh, I love it. And we're going to have some fun on today's show, of course. But Caleb, we want to get to know you. Tell us about your background, your stops along the way, how you got to where you are today, and any tips for folks that want to do a little bit of what you do.
All right. So you want me to briefly discuss this, but I feel like at this point in my life, it's hard to briefly discuss anything. But I'll say, like, I think when I was like 13 years old, we'll go back there. I thought I was going to be a pro baseball player and then realized quickly that I wasn't. And I was like, what can I do? And we didn't have the beauty of LinkedIn. We didn't have the networking that is all online now. We didn't have the access to people like we do now. And I just thought, hey, if I can't play, I might as well be an agent. I'll never forget my dad circling a name in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Was like, this is an agent. If you would like to become one, here's a guy you should kind of contact. And the name was Leon Rose, who is now, you know, head of basketball operations. I think that's his title with the New York Knicks. But at that time, he was representing Allen Iverson. He got to Allen Iverson through Rick Brunson, which is obviously Jalen Brunson's father. And the whole article kind of detailed his path to being an agent, going to Temple Law School after Dickinson and all that kind of stuff. So I remember being in high school and having my Nokia 5165 and calling Leon's office that I honestly think I just found the number on Google or AOL or something like that. I never got a hold of Leon. I kept calling and I was talking to different secretaries, people who I thought were their secretary. Oh, he'll call you back. Oh, he'll call you back. He never did. And I kept calling, went through high school, was like, I still want to be an agent, and went to college and ended up reading The Business of Sports Agents, which is, I think, over this shoulder here, and highlighting names after names, Googling the names, and found one name in particular that a guy lived in Philly, Michael Siegel, and highlighted that name, emailed him, said, I saw your name in this book, read it, all the stuff, kind of gave him the 411 of what I gathered from that book to show him that I actually could read and comprehend things. Scheduled a meeting with him, got an internship. So while I was at Temple, I was doing that and really thought at that point in my life that I was on this way to being an agent. But I saw a lot of things that probably would get me arrested or at least canceled if social media and camera phones videos were around then. So I realized they didn't like it. It was too cutthroat. There was really like no integrity and I couldn't do it. So I looked at myself and said, what skills do I have? I wanted to be a scout because I love writing reports on players. So I scouted a year with the Phillies locally in Philadelphia. And at the same time, I was working on building like a branding side of what I did. So social media, online branding, all that kind of stuff. Because this is 08, 2009 when social media was becoming, you know, this conglomerate that it is now. And did those both for a year. Realized I couldn't do scouting because I never played collegiately. I didn't really have the acumen or the way to just kind of articulate what a player was. But I was in rooms with all these former players and I thought it was pretty cool. The other thing I don't think I could have done was I couldn't have worked for that little pay or for free. Then I started to make money doing digital branding and working with athletes, personalities, and all that kind of stuff. Really loved it. Did that, started to find some jobs in e-commerce locally. Did that for probably about like 6 to 8 years, started my own agency, had some bigger name clients, bigger brands. That was how we got to Jim Stakes because they were my client back in Philly. Loved what I was doing. And then at one point I was like, I think I was 26 or so. I was like, I need health insurance. So I went to 160 over 90, which everybody now knows as this gigantic branding agency, but I started pretty much all their social channels and their social department. So went in there for a meeting to see if I could white label all their business. And say like, hey, you bring the clients to me, I'll do all the social media. And the guy who's no longer the CEO because he got bought out, took me to a bar, made me an offer. And was like, why would we bring you in to do white label when we could just hire you? And I was like, they're going to win. Like, they're going to know that this is what I wanted to do anyway. So he made me an offer, sipped a beer, said, I don't know. He said, here's $5,000 more. Sipped a beer again, said, I don't know. He kept throwing more money. I ended up working there for 18 months. And it was a very good experience. The 18 months accelerated who I was, what I became, the skills that I had, it put it into play, had the greatest client portfolio that you could think of, and really built up what 160 over 90 is today. I mean, there's so many things I could talk about with 160 MRI, but I'll tell you that. But after working there for 18 months, I didn't like who I became. I was getting fatter, drinking too much beer, trying to be a hipster, I think, too much, and was engaged to be married and was like, I don't think I could work 60 to 80 hour weeks and just be this unhealthy. So I was experiencing what people now think is a cool thing to say, which is a burnout. I was going through that stage, and I was not who I thought I like who I was. And I was going through therapy and like all these other things. And I remember texting my sport marketing professor, Julie Lanzillo, and saying like, I need to get out. I need something else. And she runs the program I now teach at. So she was very helpful. She was like, you know, can you start Monday? Came in, pinched hit, or as we called it, Mariana Rivera, a class, came in. And I loved teaching this to the students. I loved being the person who could help them get to where they wanted to be in their career. And I saw the need there of being a liaison or acting as a bridge from the classroom to the industry, because I did have so many contacts, because I did have such a robust network that could help them. And after that, you know, that was 2015 to March of 2016, I ended up getting a full-time job. I've been there since, and I was able to get my master's, and I just finished my doctorate last August. So I love what I'm doing. It's crazy to say that whole story and just look back on how many years it's been, but you've been there, so you've kind of heard some of it.
No, time flies. And I mean, just hearing about like the grassroots networking you did back in the day of calling phones, getting their secretaries and showing up. And just, do you see that? How do you see networking today when you're talking to students now? Like, is it easier? Is it harder because the burden of entry is easy for students? Like, anyone can send a LinkedIn message or a quick email versus taking time to go and read Michael Siegel's book and make a call. Like, how do you see that perspective? Like, is it easier or is it harder nowadays?
Yeah, so it's a very loaded question, because the thing that you have to do differently is you have to realize who you are. And that's so hard in this world. There's so much noise. There's so much shit on social media. There's so much shit in the world that a lot of people are like, oh, I'm a little bit of this person, a little bit of that person. They don't really know truly who they are. So I hear the phrase authentic self, right? Now, when I was reaching out to Leon Rose, I didn't know who I was yet. I was still becoming. I was in emerging adulthood, right? But I also never got a hold of him. And there was no medium for me to write a 280 character message to convey that. The thing is that if he would have answered and been like, why is this 14-year-old kid doing this instead of, you know, trying to pick up girls at a high school dance, that would have been my value. It's like, no 14-year-old kid is doing that. So I think the thing that we look at now is that because the access is easy, because online and all you have to do is create a platform is so easy, everybody should be doing it. Not everybody is, but there are so many people doing it. So when you do send that message, when you do reach out, you have to figure out a way to get through, cut through the noise, cut through all the other people. It's essentially like cutting through the line to get to the front. You know, I was in the class the other day and I said, how many of you would pick up the phone and do this? And like three kids raised their hand and they're afraid to pick up the phone. So maybe going back to that, picking up the phone is actually the competitive advantage because nobody does it anymore. So I don't have a one solidified answer because I think it depends on the person. But sliding in DM seems to be the laziest way to do it nowadays. However, if someone's DMs are open, why not? Like, why wouldn't you shoot your shot, right? So I think that the way you answer it is look at the person that you're trying to reach, look at the industry that they're in, look at their age and how they're accessible. So if it's someone in digital media, I think that might be the best way to do it is going through digital media. Right. But if it's someone who's maybe a CEO and they look like they might be busy, I think picking up the phone is actually the best way to do it. Anytime you can play up mutual connections or shared connections is definitely the best way to do it. But that's not always guaranteed.
Hell yeah. No, even talking to student or the student interns that we've had at Greenfly over the years and at my other jobs as well, like I always tell them, take advantage of the time when you're a student, when you're in that window, because you can reach out your batting average with reach outs and getting people to just to chat with you from an information interview perspective is never going to be high right now. Like I can call someone and ask for an interview and to do some sort of like competitive intelligence or just to get to know them in general. But if you call and you say you're a student just trying to learn more about the industry, especially in the sports space, from my experience, 5 out of 10, if not better, are going to say, oh yeah, sure, I'll give you 15 minutes or 20 minutes. Like, take advantage of that window while you have it, because you miss it when it's gone. I wish I was still had an EDU email address. But you can't talk about early in your career, really understanding that transition from social media is a hobby and occupation to something that truly had business, value, I guess, and it could really be approached strategically. I mean, you early on were doing strategic social media when it was actually true that it was mostly interns running the social, or at least entry level people. I was one of those entry level people that was running social for teams back in the day. So, like, what was your experience like growing up in that space as it really did mature very rapidly, and how did that affect what you need to bring to the table to work in that space?
Yeah, another great question. So the way I answer this question is I go back to a story about when I was starting out in social. And I remember interviewing for a company that's an e-commerce company, and it was not in sports. And I was just doing it because not many companies were hiring, but obviously an e-commerce company is more suitable when everybody's, hesitant about hiring for social. An e-commerce company makes more sense because you're attracting and bringing people digitally online to buy online, right? It makes sense. There's no foot traffic in person, all that kind of stuff. So I was talking to this company, and I remember them saying, all right, you have a project. And your project is you have to act like you're a brand or take a brand that you've worked with and come up with their social strategy. And I'm like, man, I really haven't done this yet. So I said, you know what? I have. I'm the brand. I said, I currently have more followers on Twitter and every platform that was accessible at that time than this company that I'm interviewing for. So let me put myself against them. And the reason why I did that, it's not to brag, because I don't think followers are the bragging metric. But back then, this is like 2009, 2010, what metrics did we have? It was the only metrics that you would see, which really was followers and shares and, replies maybe. And that was the biggest vanity metric. That's why people were buying followers. So I was like, that's what I'm going to use. So I did this one. I did like Caleb Mezzi, basically LLC. And I said, I'm going to act like this. And I put my, picture up there, and I'm like, listen, I don't have a product. I'm an ugly white guy. If I could sell myself to get people to follow me and have interest and hang on every one of the tweets I send out, I can do it for your company that actually has a product, that actually is solving a problem, that has a use and a demographic that you're trying to reach. And I think that when I did that, it was pretty like, whoa, this is actually what we need. It doesn't matter who the product is, this strategy will work. But going back to the strategy question that you said was like, I've always liked writing, and I've always liked looking at things from like, an aerial view where you can say like, all right, what are we trying to accomplish here? But I think that what happened with Twitter is because everybody's like, we have to be there, or Instagram or Facebook, we have to be there. So let's just be there. And that being there is a tactical thing. There's no strategy to being there. It's like going to a party. I just want to see what's going on. Let me look around, stand with my, back against the wall. But what are you going to do when you get there? What's the point of you being at this party? You're trying to walk home with someone. You're trying to, show off your dance moves. Like, what are you doing? And I was always thinking about that. I mean, now everybody says this on social media, but I remember saying it back then. It's like, what is the point here? Are we trying to find new people? Are we trying to get people to our website, to generate website traffic? Are we trying to control and monopolize our SEO? Like, what are we trying to do? And that's the way I looked at strategy, because the tactical stuff is easy. You can hire an intern to do it if you have a strategy, right? The tactical stuff is like, all right, now that I have my strategy in place, now let's execute.
I love that. I know even from speaking to your class in the past, is we often talk about how everyone that has a social media profile or whatever platform they're on, and if they're posting on it, there is some strategy there, or at least there should be, of like, what are you trying to portray? Why do you post this content but not this content? Why do you choose this copy and not this copy? Hey, you went to a party, but are you gonna post about it? Or this is good enough for the stories but not good enough for my feed. Like, there's so much decision making in there that is truly strategic at the end of the day, and in this case, the product or the company is you, the person. And so like it happens every day. And it's even more, I think people are becoming more and more aware of it now too. And that's why you're seeing stuff like stories come out, because it's less pressure, but it's not going to be in the feed forever and stamp me forever as well. So I want to also then talk about how that ultimately then starts to translate into the sports world, both from your hands-on experience as well as what you're seeing now with students. Is I think we still oftentimes focus on numbers instead of followers. Now it's engagement, and engagement can mean a lot of things. It can happen a lot of ways. And sometimes it's tied directly, coherently, cohesively with the strategy. Sometimes it's just, hey, we're going to get some engagement, but it doesn't really seem to have a tie to anything, any bigger picture, thing of that nature. So when you're thinking about trying to instill these values in students, and also what you're seeing play out in the marketplace, are we still not at that point where social media strategy is something that every organization has, that it's still something that we're trying to figure out, while these people that are actually pushing the buttons are just still being judged on engagement metrics at the end of the day?
I mean, I think everybody does have a strategy in place now. I don't know how progressive it is. I don't know how outlandish it is. I mean, talking from experience, right? One of many reasons why I wanted to get out of social and I felt burnout is because all these platforms kept coming up and then going away, and they kept coming up and then going away. And I kind of like, I don't want to say laugh, but I like sigh every time I see like this TikTok media specialist who's getting hired, because like, that's what it's become. It's become sectored, and it should be like that, because someone who is really good at making content is a really good content creator. But someone who is really good at making TikTok content is a totally different content creator. It really is. I mean, we remember this phase. I think we're out of it now, where, oh, this is great content, let's post it to Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at the same time. Right. And now we don't see that. And it's great. It's great that we don't see that, because that's where it became super, super overwhelming. And I think that when that shifted, it's because they started to add people to their teams and it wasn't one person doing it. But when it was one person doing it, that's why I was like leaving, because I was like, I can't keep up with these platforms. The algorithms change all the time. A new platform comes up, we feel like we have to be there instead of just focusing on what we do well. So the focusing on what we do well is kind of what I was going to say is the overarching strategy for major companies. What do they do well? There's been so many years, really, it's been over a decade, that they can now focus on social media and say, this is what we do well, and we're going to continue doing it. We see, I think the best performance of it is during the Super Bowl. Like, we see the brands who are snarky and they just take jabs, right? We see the ones who come out with like, oh, our commercial just went live and now we're going to do this post commercial, or this happened, this play happened, let's, you know, be on top of that. That's where you're seeing what they do well. Like, they're almost just like, here's our performance. I could talk for days about strategy just because I really do like it. But I think that the key thing here is that I do think strategy is in place. And I think that teams are starting to evolve as platforms and algorithms evolve to fit what their needs are and what they do best.
And I want to take a segue from there to also then talk about how that fits into some of the research that you've done for your dissertation and what you teach as well on the athlete side, on the athlete marketing, athlete brand side, and also just what it means to really have a career after you're done playing as well, and the different ways that athletes can go about that. So I guess give us a little idea of what your research has consisted of and what you've learned so far, and also frankly, like, how hard it is to do research in the industry because it changes so much so frequently.
Yeah, so this is a really loaded question just because I have so many different ways I can take it. But I'll say my research really started from my past experiences. And I was looking at the path that I went through, which I explained, I thought pretty lengthy about, you know, I wanted to be a player, then I wanted to be an agent, then I worked with players and I saw this stuff. The continuing part there has been, I love athletes. Like, I just love working with athletes, being around athletes, people who have good work ethic. I loved it, right? So I tried to figure out different ways that I could do that. And it's not like I'm a cleat chaser. It's more that like, I think that elite talent is amazing. And I think that if you put elite talent with sports, it's just, it's, you know, it's like my bread and butter of what I love. So getting to know athletes on a personal level and seeing that they devote so much time and energy to their craft, whatever sport it may be, and it's for such a short period of time. And then they kind of get left empty when it's over. And you and I know that, like, it could be over at 24, it could be over at 27, it could be over at 32, 35, or if you're Tom Brady, 95, right? Like, we see this happening every day. What I saw was, I saw that there was an opportunity in terms of the digital space for athletes to create a brand for themselves. Now, many don't want to do it, like the Tim Duncans of the world. That's not their personality, right? But Tim Duncan actually knows who he is, and he knows where he's going to go after playing. He knew that when he was a player, and he knows that now. So I'm not going to say, I'm going to sit here, it's the opportunity that everybody has to take. I actually look at social differently now than I used to, which was like, you have to be on it. You have to be on everything. You have to be present, because if you're not, you're losing out on meeting these people and that person and this opportunity and that opportunity. I look at LinkedIn as like a professional network, and everything else is kind of just like a branding network. Yes, you can brand yourself on LinkedIn. I find it to be a little obnoxious. The way LinkedIn has become this, like, we're going to write this micro blog or novel, and then you're going to click see more. And then you see all these things and these, you know, people who are like tree huggers, you know, commenting all these things. Like, I don't know how LinkedIn became that. For me, LinkedIn is an access point to professionals, right? And I feel the same way for athletes. You are an athlete. And like you were saying with the student analogy, you are an athlete for a period of time. You are a student for a period of time. When you're an athlete, you have this open door to just say, hey, I'm a player on this team. I'm going to be in this town. Would you like to meet? And you can meet any professional in the world. But going back to your question about my research was really focused on the career transition for athletes. I narrowed my focus to professional baseball players because I feel like professional baseball players are a very oppressed category of athletes. And I know that that word gets thrown around a lot, but I really do mean that. All the recent news with minor league baseball and major league baseball should hopefully change that. But minor league baseball players are misunderstood. People don't understand what they go through. They don't understand what they do and how they devote so much time and effort into this playing, right, and getting nothing for it, and what they have to go through to get to the top. So I don't want to go too far off on a tangent with the recent news, but I think what I wanted to focus on was how can I build a model that would help them to transition to life after baseball? And that's exactly what I did. So I could talk more about that, but in terms of how it goes hand in hand with digital media and networking and all that kind of stuff, I think that that plays a role. I think that their digital presence plays a role. I think that the ability to network, find other people, other careers, kind of like the exploratory phase of career development, could really help them in their next phase in life.
Let's dig into that a little bit, because there are some athletes that you reach a certain level of performance and notoriety in your sport that you're good. You can go and wherever, make guest appearances at clinics or run your, or put your name on a camp or put your name on a car dealership or just go and give talks. And that can sustain you or your income level the rest of your life. Then you have others who might be sort of in between a little bit where, yeah, they might have a name, but not enough where someone's going to pay them to speak to their company or whatnot. And then you have others who just, you know, you burn out in minor leagues or wherever, you don't make it to the show, or maybe you have a cup of coffee and then you're out and you got to join the workforce like the rest of us normal people or whatever. So like, have you found, does that framework kind of fit the athlete narratives that what you have found? And then like, is it something that the athlete needs to figure out really early on of, hey, I need to start thinking about post-career, or hey, or no, this sport is going to sustain me in my income for the rest of my life and let me raise a family. Like, what are those different, I guess, frameworks look like for athletes, and how does that affect kind of the direction they should go?
Yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to answer correctly. So if I'm off base, just keep me. All right. So a lot of what I found, and again, the research was narrowed to baseball players, but I do think that there's an opportunity, and I hope to do this in the future, where I can use this model and apply it to other sports, the same kind of methodology I did, the same way I went about it. But I think a lot of it is like, you're looking at the current situation, right? So I believe in my research that the transition to retirement is an ongoing process. It's not a singular event. Although on Twitter, Tom Brady retires, it's a tweet. Seriously, it's a tweet to everybody else. So that's like, oh, I remember this moment. I remember where I was. Then he comes back, right? But it's an ongoing process, because the minute you get drafted or signed and you're on a team, it's inevitable that you are going to retire. There is not a single player besides Tom Brady and maybe Julio Franco who could keep playing, right? Like, there, you are going to be a former player longer than an active one. It's just a known fact. So at that point, when you know it's an ongoing process, there are different things that you can be doing along the way. A lot of that could be digital focus, right? You know, you build up this audience so that when you do retire, that you have an audience that you could, hey, sell wine to, or hey, sell a house to. I don't know what it is, right? It depends on what their interest. But based off my research, it was like looking at the situation right here. So I am a single A player, I'm a double A 26-year-old, whatever it may be, and going from yourself right now to a professional self. It's not that you're not a professional as a baseball player, because we know you are, you're getting paid to do it. But you're looking at the situation and the person going into this professional thing. So for me, what I do is we actually ranked key factors along the way, you know, and I could give you those key factors, but it would take up the rest of this podcast between all the stages. But one of the things I will highlight here is like strengths, weaknesses, and transferable skills. I think transferable skills are such a huge part of athletes going into the workforce, like you were talking about in your kind of phrasing of the question, because they work so hard to get here. They don't know how to articulate the skills that they've acquired into a different, you know, workforce. So when you look at the key factors, the strengths, weaknesses, and transferable skills, the next part we look at is what strategies can we put in place? So is networking a strategy? It can be. It depends how you want to do it. Is it building up your Instagram following because you want to sell a product? Or is it because you want to do lessons like you were talking about? Like, I know somebody not too far from you, actually, who is doing like speed lessons, like how to, you know, increase your speed and doing it on the base pads and showing that stuff. So he's creating content around that. And that's great, right? If you want to do something with like NFTs and blockchain, how can you create content around that? Maybe those are the strategies. Maybe you can get, 7 or 8 a.m. coffee with some high ranking CEOs in California or in Arizona or Las Vegas, whatever it may be. Those are strategies that we can put into place. The third one, which is just so happens to be third base. So if you can't tell, we're going around a diamond here. Third base is what support you have, right? So the scary thing is, and we've seen it with, you know, mental health and so many different athletes, you need to have support along the way. It's not going to be easy. It's definitely not going to be a walk in a different park, right? Once you leave playing sports. So do you have family around? Do you have a spouse? Do you have kids? Do you have your grandparents? Are you financially supported? Do you need help there? Like whatever it may be. And the whole point of having that at third base is because if you have that support, that's who's going to get you back home. So that's like the whole kind of thing I've made, because I believe that a lot of the research I did is great and it's all amazing. But if you can't articulate it, if you can't visualize it for a baseball player or for their families who are going to need my help, like it doesn't matter, because they're just gonna be like, oh, this guy wrote a dissertation just because he wanted to graduate. And that's partially true. But at the same time, I have some valuable information and this is how I want to pitch it to you. So I hope that answers like your question in terms of, but I do think that digital plays a role there. It's just like, we have to figure out how to get from that situation to your professional self and how we can use it. I can give you so many like examples of players who are doing it the right way. But a lot of us see as fans, we see like the big names, like the Jeters, right? And what they're doing, but there's so many athletes who are doing this the right way of like, hey, I'm going to announce my retirement. I'm going to go into this. Please continue to follow me. They don't say this stuff, but continue to follow me as I go into this venture, into that venture. And I kind of find out who I'm going to be in this professional setting.
And is it becoming, or not, I guess, necessarily becoming, but what's the challenge like for athletes to activate those digital and social channels and really help to build that brand, whether it's directly only tied with their sport or also starting to bring in other elements and other skill sets and other, you know, other traits they want to be known for in the foreseeable future. And I think if you talk about the superstar level players, yeah, like you're going to be known for your sport forever. It's fine. And you're going to have a ton of followers just by you're going to join Instagram and you're going to, before you even post your first time, you're going to have a million followers in whatever, 3 hours. There's not too many athletes like that. If you are the whatever rookie that goes up back and forth between AAA and majors or whatever it might be, you are now, you're still known for your sport. People are still going to follow you because you're an athlete they saw and you're professional and all that. And you're living what they think is a dream life. But now you're, as an athlete, being a professional athlete, you're just one more person in this really crowded field of people vying for followers and attention. And athletic sports is still a source of fame, but now there are people that, you know, that like my parents or my friends or friends of friends or kids or whatever, they might not know who the best player in the NFL is, but they're going to know some like TikTokers or YouTubers that I never heard of, but they're the most famous people like in their school among their generation. So this more crowded, this, I guess, changing definition of what fame is nowadays, because everyone is so accessible and we're not all watching the same TV show or same game all at the same time. I mean, except for maybe NFL at times. So like as an athlete trying to find your niche or find your place in this world, if you are going to want to also be known for whatever, hey, I want to get in fashion, I want to get into music, or I want to get into gaming, or I want to get into this space or wineries, or whatever it might be, like is the fact that you're a professional athlete something that you should try to exploit and use your advantage, because it's going to give you one more leg up against the person that is a full-time quote unquote creator playing in that same space? Or like, what's that, I guess that framing or that conversation look like to an athlete that is trying to, hey, I want to be a Twitch gamer on the side and have that be my backup plan. But hey, now all of a sudden I'm going up against people who have been doing this forever and it's a really crowded space.
I think it comes back to what we always talk about with like building a brand, which is add value. like be at a place where you know what you bring to the table, what value you bring. And if it just so happens you're an athlete, whether you're I don't know how to rank athletes. Like if you're a grade one athlete versus a grade 10, like whatever you are on the scale and you just so happen to be an athlete. Like I know athletes who drink wine, like a CJ McCollum, for example, right? He's not always just posting about basketball. He might be posting about his favorite wine or, you know, the album he's listening to. That doesn't matter that he's CJ McCollum on the Portland Trailblazers or the New Orleans Pelicans. Like it doesn't matter. He's CJ McCollum. This is what he likes. So I think that's how he adds value to the conversation. That's one part. You know, I think of a person like Tim Dillard. I don't know if you remember him, but he was like a minor league pitcher, hilarious dude. And honestly, when content was starting as a buzzword, he was creating content because he was a pitcher. He didn't play every day, but he had access to minor leaguers and would almost like recreate movie scenes that were hilarious. And he would do it. I don't know if he did it on his iPhone or like a high def camera. And then he would post them and he would call himself Dim Tillard, like as a joke, like switch the first initials of his first and last name. And I look at a guy like that and I'm like, he had a career in comedy. If he wanted to be like a Will Ferrell kind of comedian or like actor, he could have done it. I don't think that's what he's doing. I think he's doing broadcasting, but he showcased his personality and that's what value he did. I know a lot of players who have gone into like the financial or wealth management world and they might put like former player or, you know, I don't know, washed up baseball player in their bios for like LinkedIn or Twitter or something like that, but they don't lead with that. And I think that's the thing is when we always talk about identity and it's, you know, what you do, not who you are. I think if you don't lead with it and you're like, this is the value I bring here, that's great. Like I'm thinking of all these different players as we're talking about it. Because like that player who I'm talking about, the financial and wealth management, they're going to be posting about how to manage your taxes for the upcoming season. Or if you're a MLB player who just got drafted, this is what you should do with your first paycheck. So he's like looking at it from both lenses. I manage wealth and, you know, finances, but I also come at it from, I was a former baseball player. I look at someone like Matisse Thybulle, like who, when they were in the bubble, did all this YouTube content because he likes to make those videos. He doesn't lead with like, what's up? I'm a basketball player. You don't have what I have. You can't be me. He's like, you want to insight into my world? That's the value he brings. So I think that like, that's the simple answer. It's like, what value do you bring? The hard part is how do you have that conversation so that someone can figure out what value they bring? That's the really hard part because a lot of people be like, well, I'm a third baseman for the Yankees. Like, why do they care? Or like, why should I do that? They already come here and yell at me at the stadium. So I think those kind of conversations in terms of developing what that is, both as a player, but then also when you retire, it is probably the tougher part. And I think it really comes back to a key part in adding value for anybody, which is what are you interested in? Like, if you can figure that part out and share with the world, you will start to build a community around those interests. Because it's very seldom that you have an interest that nobody else is interested in.
No, totally. And I think I'm thinking about too of what having that ex player or having is it okay or is it even advisable to lean into that in some ways? Because like if you are a wealth management person and you're going up against a ton of other Northwestern Mutual or whatever Edward Jones representatives, if you say if you know, ex-Yankee or whatever, someone's going to be more likely to take your call than someone who doesn't have ex-Yankee on there, even if you're not a known name at all. But you can talk about the, you know, one day you played for the Yankees or whatever it might be. And I imagine some athletes will, or ex-athletes will shy away from that saying like, no, I don't want to, you know, get your business because I, you know, can tell you about the one time I got to shake Roger Clemens' hand or whatever it might be. Whereas others are going to be like, hell yeah, I'm going to use that to my advantage. Like they're more likely to buy a car for me because I once played for the AAA team that's located in this town. And so like, do you find is having that ex-athlete in your background? And we talked about, you also talked about transferable skills and that can go for like job opportunities too of like, hey, I got my way into the elite of the elite sports because I work my ass off. And so, you know, I'll work my ass off for you. It's like, where does that ex athlete fit into that post playing career? Is it something that should be exploited? And yeah, you know, you don't have your pro sport playing window anymore, but you can still have that almost like a, whatever, like an Ivy League degree that I have, it sticks with you through your whole life. Like, should you exploit that? Or are some athletes you want to just shy away from it and saying like, I don't want to either drag me down or B, you know, be something that I'm like tokenized or known as the ex-athlete.
Yeah. I mean, the word exploit is an interesting one because it has a negative connotation. I like the leverage piece of it because I think the leverage is it's a good story to tell, right? But again, it's not who you are. It's what you did at that point in the conversation. I think that like in talking to athletes, there were some that were like, I worked at this, you know, government job, for example, and they found out that I had a baseball reference page. like that comes up in conversation. They're like, well, why didn't you tell me? And they were like, I don't want to lead with that because then I'm now branded as a former baseball player. Nobody really wants to be the former anything unless you're like, you know, Mr. or Mrs. Swimsuit model or body lifter, right? Like nobody wants to be that. But at the same time, it is part of your story. So I think going back to the adding value piece, this is becoming who you are. You're always becoming, like you're always growing. You're always, you know, working towards something. And I think in that sense of, hey, I work in, you know, financial advising or I work in real estate, I was this, right? What did I take from this, meaning a former baseball player, former basketball player, that has helped me in real estate? Bridge that gap, tell that story. I think that's the beauty there. I think when we talk about transferable skills, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was actually going to lead with my answer with that, is looking at what transferable skills can we bring to the table because of what we did, because of who we were and now where we're going. It shows the athlete that maybe they didn't become Babe Ruth, right? Maybe they didn't become, you know, Michael Jordan, but what they did do is acquire skills that will help them in their next phase, whether that's a career, you know, being a parent, you know, father, you know, mother, whatever it is. It wasn't hard work for nothing.
Yeah, it's unique experience. If you're talking to a potential employer or investor, like, what's your secret power? Like, is it because as an athlete, whatever, I had to rehab an injury and now I know more about what people with rehab knee injuries go through than anyone else? Or in my own company at Greenfly, working with Sean Green, yes, former baseball player, but he got to know about the demands of a player for their time, for the content they may need, and he used that insight to build the company that employs me today.
Sean Green's a perfect example because he talks about like being still, right? And like the practice of stillness. And he learned that from hitting. And he definitely practices that. Not that I know him personally, but he definitely practices that as a CEO, as someone who built a company from nothing. Like you have to take that skill. And someone's going to say, where'd you learn this skill? Usually if like for me and you, it's like our parents or school. Mm-hmm. These people can say, from playing baseball or playing football.
A couple of minutes left here with Caleb Mezzi. He is assistant professor of sport management and business at Newman University. We can keep going all day, Caleb. I have a few more minutes before we get to those terrible stat. And I want to talk about the something that I think we've all dealt with, and the idea of identity. And we've kind of alluded to it already with ex-athlete versus, you know, if that's always going to be carried with you. I even see it in the space that I'm in, the part of the greater space that I used to be in too, of seeing people now move away from being a social media manager for a sports team. And it's like, hey, that was me. Like that's how people know me. People know me because of that. And now I'm just a normal quote unquote person working at a, you know, 9-to-5 job. I'm not working games on the weekends. Like, who am I? Same idea with like, I was a professional athlete. People knew me as that. And now who am I after this? And we're seeing it right now in the college space, as college athletes, you get bigger and bigger brands. A majority of them are not going to be athletes for the next 10 years, let alone the next 5 years. So like, what have you seen in terms of grappling with that identity of yes, it's the sport is going to take up your whole life when you're in it, but you know, you need to transition at some point. And again, how that applies to beyond sports, like for people in the social sports world too, for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, identity is so, you know, convoluted in terms of like what you want to look into specifically. There are definitely things that I like joke about on Twitter, which I actually like, I joke about them because of my sarcastic, dark humor. But like at the same time, like I think it's a sickness that is out there where like people be like, oh, I'm not, you know, my job. That's what I do. And they say all this stuff and they work in social media, but then like, they're so happy to post this video. They got a promotion or they got a new job. You can't weigh them at the same caliber, right? And say that like, I am not this, but I am this. Yes, you can be excited about getting a new job, but you also have to understand who you are as a person. And I think that comes to the question that we really struggle with as humans right now. COVID didn't make it any easier, right? Blame COVID for everything. But I think that like, if you ask the average person, you know, who are you? They can't answer the question. You know, you get the canned interview question, tell me about yourself. People don't know how to answer the question. They always go back to titles. I am a senior at this school, or I am a coordinator at this job. That's not who you are. Why are you answering? Let me tell me about yourself with that answer. And that's a struggle that I have when I hear this stuff from students, from people, from 40-year-olds to 60-year-olds. Like, I don't care who you are. That's what they do. If you look at it from titles, I think the titles that we should look at it are the ones that are human and they're sticky, meaning like brother, sister, you know, mother, father, you know, like cousin, like all those things. Those are things that whether we get a new job or not, hopefully they continue with us. That's who we are as human beings. But we tend to always go with like, I'll say I'm a professor, right? Like that's my title at work. That's actually not who I am. Like I wouldn't walk around being like, yeah, that's me. I'm the professor. Like I'm not an and one mixtape guy. So like, that's to me, like what we really struggle with. And athletes are the same thing. If you talk to an athlete, and I could tell you this from experience, working with baseball players, when you say to them, what are you interested in? They always say baseball. And I say, you can't be interested in an innate object. It's a baseball. Unless you have some weird fetish, you can't be interested in. So what is it about baseball that you're interested in? And if you ask 10 people, you're going to get 9 different answers, right? You might get similar things like, I like the failure. I like being part of a team. That's what you're interested in. Being part of a team, right? You're a team player. That's something that is part of your identity, part of your fabric, part of who you are as a person. And that's what we need to talk more about, right? I thrive in hectic, chaotic situations. That's part of your identity. I love that stuff. Like I think that is a more defining identity than I'm a teacher or I'm an educator or I'm a nurse. Like I just think it is. So when I talk to these baseball players and I say this stuff, they get to a point where like, all I know is baseball. And that's not true. That's all you think you know because that's what you've done. But what can we talk about baseball? What can we talk about things that you've learned during baseball that will, you know, spread it? And then we could open them up or dive into those little pieces of fabric to really find out who you are as a person. We start to see this more and more with athletes, especially in the Olympics, actually, when they retire or when they're in their off season, we start to see like who they are, whether it's a vulnerable stage and something happens, or it's just like, okay, well, they're not competing right now. So we can see like what their tweets and Insta stories are about. Right. But like, if we just thought for a second, like what makes us who we are, it is always comes back to those interests. Like, what are we interested in? So I go back to that in terms of the answer. But yeah, I mean, the identity thing is something I it's actually made me be on social media less because of all these people who say, oh, I'm not, this is not my identity. But then they do these other actions that really show that you put a lot of stock into what your job is. So stop lying about it. Like, I wish people would just be like, this is who I am. And like, just be true with like what they are. Cause it doesn't matter what your job is, if that's who you are.
No, I kept on thinking in my head as you were explaining, like the more than phrase, like I'm more than an athlete. That's part of what that's my day job, but I have passions. I have things I care about. And I'm more than a social media manager for an NBA team. It's tough to grapple with that, but I think we're embracing that more as a society now, and you're expected to be more than just what you what people know you for at the surface level.
But when someone says to you, well, then what are you? You should be able to answer that. You can't just take a stand on something that is happening, that's trending in Twitter, and be like, see, I'm more than that. I don't just have to dribble and shut up. You can't just do that because that's trend jacking. Like that's just jumping on a trend, and that's being a sponge and being like, oh, today I'm pissed off about this. That's not who you are. That's what you're pissed off about right now. And I think that's what it is. It's like, I like to ask athletes, you are more than, I know that, but like, can you tell me what it is? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see that play out right now in the college athletic space too, as these kids are trying to figure out what they're all about. And they're still, you know, they're still kids. They're not sure yet. They're still growing up. One last thing for you, Caleb, because I'm sure we'll start. There are so many things I want to touch on here, but I'd be remiss if I didn't try to pick your brain a little bit about the fact that you get to teach and work with and learn from the young generations. All of us want to know like what these kids are into and what the future is going to look like, what sports fandom looks like, and what sports business is going to look like moving forward. So I guess just open-ended, like, what do we get wrong? What do we get right about this generation? What are they interested in when it comes to the sports space? What are they interested in when it comes to athletes? And are they following athletes? And how are they following them? So again, just open-ended, just to learn a little about what you picked up on in your years teaching this next generation of hopefully sports fans.
Yeah, I mean, I've been teaching for 6 or 7 years now, and it's interesting because it's still probably the same generation. But I think that there's been a lot of changes, especially before COVID and after COVID. I think a lot of what we do as elders, right, to a younger demographic is usually just assume. And we just say that they're all like this. We go through the stereotypes instead of asking questions. You know, like the other day I had a student who had AirPods in his ear, both ears. And instead of me saying, take those off, you whatever, I said, what are you listening to? And he says, nothing. And I said, then why do you have them in your ears? And it's like asking those questions gets them to be more, you know, I guess inquisitive of like how we go about this. And I think the other part is to create an environment. How do you create an environment where, yes, I'm the teacher. Yes, I'm older. Yes, I have 3 degrees and you're working towards one. And I say that because that is a huge part, because they dismiss teachers because we have the DR in front of our name for whatever reason. Right. So we have to create that environment. Like, I don't know everything. And the things I don't know, I'm going to bring in a guest speaker like Neil to talk about. Right. Or I'm going to bring in a guest speaker, or I'm going to say to you guys, tell me more about esports. Tell me more about TikTok. Like, I don't know that much about it. Right. And when you give them a seat at the table, when you give them the autonomy, and it's really called like co-crystallization, right? Like, you let them kind of pick and choose what they want to do. And then together we come up with this class or this class environment. When you do that, they feel invested. And when they feel invested, they're going to trust, they're going to be loyal to you, they're going to fight, and they're going to want to see the end product, which is whatever assignment, whatever their final is of themselves, come out to fruition and make it the best it can be. But when you change that dynamic and it's more like, this is what we're going to do, this is what I've always done, this is how my syllabus is, this is how the assignment is, you're going to take a test this day, you're going to come in and do this, they're like, I don't want to do this. Like, it's like having a trainer who's like, yeah, I'm going to build my body on your body. Like, that's not what the person wants. So I would say that's one of the things. I mean, for me, like, I am one of the younger teachers at 35 years old. I have 18-year-old students right now, which is just weird to think about, 18 and 35, because it's, you know, they're like half my age. But when I started, I was, I think, 29 or 30, and they were closer to my age. So I've, over the years, lost my touch with the wokeness, right? Like, being in touch with like the new digital things. I used to think that I was super into it. So I really do have to sit there and learn about like what they want to do, or like watch these stupid videos that they share with me, or like go on YouTube and be like, how do I become TikTok famous if I wanted to? Just know what it is, not that I'm going to be TikTok famous. And what I started to realize, I'll give you a story from last year. March 7th, we removed the mask mandate at our school for the first time, right, since COVID. And I thought that that was going to be like a rebirth. Like, everybody was going to be like, oh my God, I can see the bottom part of your face. I love going to school again. What happened was, it was getting warmer at the same time, and they were like not thrilled about going to school because for the first time ever, they could be free, right? And they wanted to just like stay, you know, in their dorms or stay at home, wherever they were, and not come to class. And I was like, I need to do something. I realized that a lot of them are on TikTok, whether they're in my class or they're out of the class, they're on TikTok. So I created an assignment where they were going to create a TikTok video, and whoever had like, I think I did like likes, comments, and shares would win like some bonus points or whatever for an assignment. And what that does is it creates the competitiveness, right? It allows them to be creative, make up their own thing. But at the same time, it's something different, right? It's something different, and it meets them where they are. Not everybody's on TikTok. Not everybody enjoys TikTok. But if you do a group setting like that, it's something different that they can do. So I'm going to continue to use TikTok in different classes over time for different things, whether it's extra credit or part of the assignment. And Neil, you and I were talking about like, just integrating it based off of people's skills, right? So like, some people might not want to be on TikTok, like with their face and talking, but they might be okay with doing the audio and piecing together some, you know, I don't know, videos and pictures to making up, you know, a TikTok reel, whatever it's called. I know it's Instagram, but you know, they might have that skill set better, or they might know how to make something go viral. I don't know what it is, but all I'm doing is asking them, you know, to bring me to that table instead of the other way around. And I think that can kind of create excitement. Plus, it's not bad if they're doing something for the class, and then they could be like, hey, look at what I did to their friends. Can you share this? Can you like this? This is pretty cool that I'm doing this in college. I never thought I would do that.
Are you finding too, and I know we're way over time, but we're in the overtime segment. This is fine with me. are they interested in sports? Like, I certainly not, I'm guessing not in the same way that our generation or generations before us were, but how do they see sports? And yes, your classes are oftentimes about sports. So you're going to have a little bit of a selective bias there just by the students that elect to take that class. But what are you seeing about their interest in sports, interest in athletes, and also for the ones that want to work in sports, you know, what drives that interest as well?
Yeah. I mean, it's the first day I always ask them, like, are you a fan of sports? Or are you a fan of sports business? I write on the board for my intro class, like, check your fandom at the door. And I think that usually pisses the ones who are there who think it's like, I'm going to be Stephen A and they're going to be Skip Bayless. Like, it's just not going to be like that. So I get those people out quickly. Like, that's just, it's my goal. I might sound brutal and people might think I'm a dick because of that, but like, that's what I have to do. I think what happens is that I have to shape their brain to like the business side, or at least see the business side. They don't have to like it, but at least see the business side. So I would say that some students come in with some notion that, oh, I'm playing basketball here. Basketball is the sport I want to work in. And I think over time they realize, like, a lot of sports are similar, right? You could work in baseball if you like basketball. I think what I've found is a lot of people don't want to work in baseball because the season's so long. Right. But like, you know, hey, basketball is my least favorite sport. I only want to work in these sports. At least they're open-minded to that, right? But when we start to go through at the freshman level what skills they need to acquire and how to look at a job description, how to start looking at companies, they realize that it's more than just professional and collegiate sports, and that there's all these opportunities for them to volunteer, shadow, and get experience. And really it comes from those experiences, what skills you acquire and then apply for a job. The other thing is I think COVID has pushed us to a different economy, actually very, very similar economy that me and you experienced when we graduated college. I'm in like 2009, which is you need a job. So it doesn't matter if you want to work in your favorite sport or not, you need a job. So that really changes their notion of when they come in, I want to work in this, I want to be this, versus I need a job. And I'm only saying that because that is the world we live in right now, and it's the truth.
Do you get the feel that they are, for the ones that are sports fans, that their friends are also fans, or that sports fandom is part of their life? Or are they like, for lack of a better way to put it, like the weird kid in their friends group who, you know, doesn't miss a game, or is in front of the TV on Sundays while everyone else is, maybe they're playing League of Legends, or they are, you know, making TikTok videos or watching their favorite YouTuber. Like, does this Gen Alpha, whatever or label you want to put on them, is being a sports fan as quote unquote like normal or as regular as it is for our generation?
Yeah, I don't know. I would be interested to do like a study on that, because there's definitely 25% of every class that I have where it's like they don't miss a game, right? Like their favorite team, Sundays are in looking at red zone, like all that kind of stuff. They play fantasy sports, they bet, like all that kind of. I'd say there's another 25% who, like, if they had the choice between watching a game and working a game, like maybe let's say a different sport, they would probably choose working. But if they weren't working, they would watch, right? So then there's another 25% is like, they just want to make money. They just want to create experiences. They just want to create memories. And that's like another 25. Then I have maybe another 25. I don't know if it's even 25 where like they actually don't watch sports at all, but that they're interested in business and they think, hey, if I'm going to do business, why not do sports? Like, those sometimes are usually the best students because they have no emotional attachment to anything. Like, you know, if a team won or lost, or if their favorite player got traded or whatever, they're just like, okay, well, what does this do for that team now? Or what does this do for that town now? Those I would say are, you know, my best students. The other thing, and this is where the 25% starts to cross over, is when I tell you that someone says they like basketball and that's all they want to play and, you know, work in, I know a lot of students who are like, they know they love football, but at the same time, they know they can't work in football because they love it so much. So they choose to work in basketball. And I actually like that. I think that's really cool.
Oh, I love that. I as you've seen me do in practice, I love getting the chance to pick the brains of young people of Gen Alpha and figure out what the heck it is they do, what they like, what they care about. And we're constantly learning. And you get to learn from your students as much as they learn from you at times, I'm sure.
100%.
Well, Caleb, we're going to have some more fun in our Wiz Wit segment. But first episode of Shareable Stat coming up right now. Man, so much fun talking to Caleb. Caleb Mezzi, Assistant Professor of Sport Management and Business at Neumann University. I've had the pleasure and privilege of knowing him for many years. We've kind of grown up in the space together. He's now helping to mold the future generations of professionals in the industry, in the sports industry and beyond. Just so inspiring to be able to talk to him. And we're going to have some fun with him coming up in our Wiz Wit segment. You definitely want to stick around for that because Caleb's a lot of fun. But first, this episode's Shareable Stat. And this Shareable Stat looks at the first NFL Sunday of 2022. If you are listening to this, you have experienced it. It was a hell of a day of games. This might be years later even. If it is years later that you're listening to this episode, it was a hell of a day, of games. But the Shareable Stat I want to share with you is about the number 30, or really maybe 25 or 30. There's still a game going on as I speak right now. But that is the number of YouTube Shorts that the NFL posted on game day Sunday. And it's a really interesting area to look at. Now, they also posted many, many more regular videos on YouTube, so to speak. And those videos racked up a lot more views per video than the shorts did. You know, the shorts were getting around, as I look on Sunday night, around 10 to 20,000, many even under 10,000, whereas their videos, some were getting, 30,000, 50,000, even some with over 200,000 on this Sunday alone. So it's certainly an interesting area to watch. YouTube Shorts are still relatively new, jumping on that short-form video bandwagon, but for the most part, especially if you talk to the creator community, YouTube Shorts has been a pretty valuable area to start to experiment, particularly for reaching audiences that may not be familiar with your work, may not be familiar with your channel, and how can you use YouTube Shorts to get them to your channel? Maybe for the NFL, we can look at what they're going to be doing. It's a lot of short-form highlights right now and fun quips and whatnot, but no matter what kind of channel you have, to think about how can YouTube Shorts be a teaser, a preview to engage more. It might just be a quick exposure to the brand, much like TikTok can be in terms of discovery and reaching those new fans that may not be as familiar with your brand. It could also be an invitation to explore your content more further on your channel. See your full video, see the full highlight show, see an analysis, join the live tune-in broadcast, whether it's on YouTube or elsewhere. So it's certainly an interesting area. I think YouTube Shorts right now are not quite being slept on, but are certainly an area to watch as it remains the biggest search engine in the world. Yes, TikTok is earning a lot of search activity these days, but it's not quite the same when you're searching for clips on an NFL Sunday. And whether you are finding the in-feed videos or increasingly maybe shorts as well, it's an area to certainly think about as you consider your own content strategy. So that's a Shareable Stat. Again, around 25 as of this taping, but it'll probably be closer to 30 by the end of the night. Is a number of YouTube shorts posted by the @NFL account on YouTube. All right, that's the Shareable Stat. Now, get yourself a Philly cheesesteak. Make it Wiz Wit, because that's the name of our upcoming segment as we hit up Caleb Mezzi for a little more knowledge and information and stories. Right back from this episode of Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Caleb Mezzi, the Assistant Professor for Sport Management and Business at Neumann University. Caleb, you schooled us in the interview. You gave us a great lecture, among other things. Are you now ready to try a little Wiz Wit?
I am. Fried onions.
A nice nod to Caleb's hometown of Philly, where he and I have shared some cheesesteaks here and there. Me inhaling them, of course. Now we're going to ask you, number one, you teach at Neumann University. Tell us, what should we know about Neumann University? What's like a fun fact, or what should we know about it?
I will say that they have the nicest people that I've ever encountered at any workplace. It's not a knock on other workplaces. Everybody is just so down to earth. And I think it comes from the Franciscan values, which, are embedded into Neumann University.
I like it. And you said they're a D3 school for athletics. What sports are they good at, if any?
That's a good question for right now. I think basketball would be the answer because they just won the championship last year. But over the time, I think of, their traditional sports, ice hockey was a big one, men's ice hockey.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah, there's something cool about D3 athletics because that the athletes playing those sports, like they're in it for the passion. They're not trying. They don't
love the game.
Yeah. For the love of the game. Exactly.
Yeah.
Number two, Caleb, going back to your time at 160 over 90, tell me your favorite project or campaign or whatnot that you got to work on when you were there.
So I think one of my favorites, I'm going to give you two answers. One of my favorites was we worked on like a signing day. This is not sports related, with UVA and Michelle Obama. It was just cool because it was Michelle Obama. It was like May 1st, whatever signing day is. But it's a very like short-lived campaign because of that. One of my favorite things I ever worked on was with the Mid-America Conference, which if I told you about the whole campaign, would seem super old hat because of when we did it. But we walked around with ping pong balls, each had a different number, and corresponding with that number was like an activity that they had to do. It's very like Jimmy Fallon-esque. So we'd walk around on media day, and each team had two or four players. It was like an offensive, defensive player. And we would go up to the players and then pick a ball and then do the challenge. And we had people like somebody who's doing Instagram, Snapchat, honestly, I think Periscope was the thing back then. So Twitter, and then I don't think we did Facebook, but I think we did Periscope. So we had like a person for each one because we only had so many phones. That was my favorite thing, just because I thought it was so fun to like come up with the idea and then execute it.
Oh, that sounds super fun. I want to track down some of that content if possible.
And I have some screenshots.
Oh, that's great. If people are listening, aren't sure, Mid-American Conference, also known as the MAC, if you know.
Yes, MAC-tion.
Number three, to Caleb, I want to hear, this definitely goes back to some of what we talked about in the interview of athletes post-career and all that, and it definitely coincides with a podcast that you have recently started, very recently. Tell us about your new podcast and what we should expect from it.
Yeah, sure. I'm glad that I can promote a little bit. Jared Perkins is a friend of mine. He's my co-host. He does a lot of writing on the human interest side of baseball players. So he actually interviewed me, heard about my dissertation, actually gave it to him, and he didn't fall asleep reading it and was like, let's do a podcast together. So we're going to interview baseball players and people, you know, have been tied to the game and talking about, you know, them as a person, but really learning about them beyond baseball. So we just started it. We've actually already recorded, I think, 3 episodes. The third one comes out this week. But it's really cool because we're really quick in terms of jumping in with the athlete and really getting to know them on a personal level.
And it's called, give us the title so we can find it.
It's called Beyond Baseball. And you can find it, I think, on Spotify and Apple.
Okay. Yeah. Check. If you like this podcast, you'll like that one too. Check it out. And you can tell just from our interview already that Caleb has a lot of interesting stuff to talk about, and these athletes bring a lot of stories to the table. All right. Number four, Caleb, I know over the years that you've talked about, written about Mamba mentality and you know, and everything that Mamba mentality stands for. So just give us a little insight into what that's meant to you, your research, and what's driven your interest in it.
Yeah. So simply put, I would say the Mamba mentality really means the pursuit of getting better each and every day. It's not like, oh, one day I'm just going to decide to be better and I'm going to do hashtag no days off, you know, living my best life, all that kind of stuff. It's really that commitment and discipline to continue doing this every day. I think it's one of the hardest things for people to do is to commit to something and doing it every day. What I have researched, learned, and written about is really not a quick hitter in terms of this segment. But I'll give you like some key pillars that we could talk about, which is like curiosity, relentlessness, excellence. I think being creative about how you go things is really interesting. But there's so many different pillars, the way people interpret and see Kobe and the Mamba mentality.
I love that. There's so much to learn from just that whole philosophy, and certainly the way that Kobe lived it and breathed it and talked about it. And it's cool to hear you articulate a little bit of it today. Well, that's another episode for us for sure.
Yeah. Yes.
Number five for you, Caleb. This one I'm interested to hear. Tell me the current athlete and the former athlete that you point to oftentimes that's really just consistently crushing it.
I would say current athlete is JJ Watt. I just love how he does social, from like helping people. I think he was helping this person whose father passed away, giving someone new shoes, to raising money after the disaster that happened in Houston, I think it was. The former athlete, I'm more struggling on the consistently crushing it part. Are we talking about like in their next career or?
However you want to interpret it, that you look to, that if you're talking to a former athlete and saying, hey, look at this guy or this gal doing a good job, like emulate them.
Okay, I have to think about that. It's tough because I don't like know what their goals are. So I'm being very analyzing. Trying to think of somebody who, I think Derek Jeter is funny because like you were talking about before, like someone who just joins and then kind of like understands social, but also gets 3 million followers. That's Derek Jeter. I love what he's doing. I love what he did with his docu that came out where he's like live tweeting thing. So I'll go with those two.
And we'll definitely find some on your podcast, I imagine, as well, that are doing a good job after baseball.
Yeah, it would be nice to have Derek Jeter.
We'll put him on the wish list. Number six for you, Caleb. Tell me just the number one piece of advice that you like to leave students with.
All right, here. I told this to students the other day. I said, if you guys make shirts, you will sell the shirts. Chase jobs. I'm sorry, chase people, not jobs. I say that because a lot of us get caught up in the applying for jobs. Oh, I see this job. Let me apply. Right. But we know, you and I, that if you apply for a job and you don't know anyone, you're not going to get that job. It's just how it is. So if you can chase people when the job posts and you know the person who has either posted that job or connected that job or someone who works at that company, because you chase that person, you will likely get that job. So chase people, not jobs.
I like that one a lot, because I'll even talk to students and young people in the workforce who are like, oh yeah, I'm killing it, man. I applied for like 12 jobs today. I'm like,
false hustle.
Okay.
False hustle.
Seriously. Number seven, I like this one. So just having had experience to talking to your class and seeing others as well, you do a great job of involving students, oftentimes having them come up with their own project from start to finish. And or brainstorming ideas. So tell me just the your favorite campaign or idea or project that really came out of one of those student-led initiatives.
I'm actually just going to go back to that TikTok idea. So because of what I was telling you with that birth of the TikTok idea, we created this account called @MezzinAround. So MEZZIN _ around. I hope that's the right handle. And because of that, it's kind of been this collective over the course of classes of different assignments that people can do. So my one class did basically they watched all these documentaries and wrote like a little synopsis, or not wrote it, but recorded a little synopsis on TikTok about what they learned from that and what other people could learn. And then another group just did like a social challenge of like, how do you get the most, you know, followers, likes, comments, all that, engagement, right? Like, so two classes kind of did that in the spring semester, and we're going to bring it into my governance, policy, and legal class, and then also my intro class again. So I would say that is one of the things that I've seen come out of, and that's student-led. They came up with the handle. They came up with the content. It was only my idea to put it on TikTok.
Oh, I like that. It's always fun, like, talking through a problem that a business is trying to solve and getting ideas from students. It's super fun to bounce off ideas and all that.
It is.
Number eight. This is a tough one. If I go back out there and visit you in Philly again, tell me the best meal to get in Philly and where to get it. And also a little bonus question, where do you go for the best cheesesteak?
Okay, so the best meal to get, I would say, is Double Knot. And I would love to take you there because it's like an Asian cuisine with like a Philly feel to it. I won't talk about where it is because it's in a old warehouse that used to have different kinds of stuff. But what, they have great sushi.
Give me the order.
So you can either go like raw food or you can get like sushi and stuff like that. But they also have like raw meats and like all these different things. Then they have like, they literally have chicken that they say is like, have you ever had Chick-fil-A chicken? This is better. Like, that's what they say. The menu is huge. It's very expensive. The drinks are also amazing. So the tally at the end of the night will be pretty hefty. So Double Knot would probably be my favorite. Angelo's would be another one. And Angelo's, you could either go cheesesteak or pizza and it would be good. But I would answer that for my favorite cheesesteak, because I don't want to talk about Pat's or Gino's. And we don't want to talk about Jim's since there was a recent fire at Jim's. But the sleeper cheesesteak place, I'll say, is Gooey Louie's. It's quite the experience and it's a great name. But Gooey Louie's is the sleeper if you want to go in South Philly and look for something where there's not as many people in line.
There we go. Go where the locals go. Don't go where all.
So I give you three places: Double Knot, Angelo's, and Gooey Louie's.
I'm set, man. It's on. Number nine. I'll come down to the wire here with Caleb Mezzi of Newman University. Tell me the athlete trend, open ended, that you're most closely following now. There's a lot of things happening in the athlete world. What's one you have your eye on?
I mean, I'm biased because of my research, but I would say just understanding more closely, like what athletes are going through in their transition, how to better prepare them. we talked a little bit about the minor league baseball and major league baseball and that the unionization of both. I think that's something that's going to be really interesting. I hope that it kind of helps minor league baseball players transition better. So the better prepared transitions are kind of the things I'm looking at closely.
I like that. And I think it's important that it's now not just accepted, but encouraged to have those conversations earlier rather than later of, yeah, it's one thing to say, I'm only focused on getting better today and playing and, you know, getting a hit my next at bat or whatever it is. But it's like, it's okay to A, be anxious about it and B, to have those conversations and to start thinking about it now.
Yes.
All right. Last one for you, Caleb. I know you're, you know, live and die Philly sports. Tell me, what's going to happen first? Are the Phillies going to win a World Series or are the Eagles going to win the Super Bowl?
When I saw this question, I was not sure how I would answer. I want to say Eagles winning the Super Bowl, but I think it might have to come down to Tom Brady retiring first. I think the Phillies are close, but not that close yet. I think the Eagles have the team that they could. It'll come down to consistency and the defense. So, as much as it hurts, I'll say the Eagles. That's what's going to happen first.
Good luck with that. Both are up against it right now. But the Eagles should have a good season. The Phillies, as a Padres fan, I'm hoping the Phillies don't make the playoffs probably. But we're both a little ways away from World Series. But you heard it here first. Put your money on the Eagles to win a Super Bowl, whether this year or some year soon. Nick Sirianni, or and Jalen Hurts maybe. All right, Caleb, you killed it in the WizWit segment. Scarfed down a couple cheesesteaks. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. Just tell us what platform they're on, who they are, and why they're worth following.
All right. Well, I actually have a couple, but I've narrowed it down to can I give more than one?
Of course.
All right. I'm going to go Steve Magnus. So Steve Magnus is at Steve Magnus. He just wrote the book Do Hard Things. I love just the way he thinks. The way he relates everything. It's not always about sports, but there's definitely a sports side to what he does. Obviously, anybody who follows me knows I retweet and like Adam Grant stuff all the time. So even throw Adam Grant in there. And then another one who I've more recently just kind of fallen into, he doesn't probably know who I am, but Sahil Bloom. His threads are just nasty. They're so good. And I think he played baseball at Stanford. A lot of the baseball guys I talk to always reference him. So I see him as like a really big leader there. And I just love what he's doing in terms of how he's positioning himself.
Those are some great recommendations. I will definitely have to check all of them out. I'm familiar with at least two of them already. So that's great. And how about you, Caleb? Where do we find you as well as all things about your podcast, your research, anything that's related to the greater Caleb Mezzi brand?
Yeah, so my brand, I guess my handles are Caleb_Mezzy, so Caleb_Mezzy. I'm so used to spelling my name my entire life. I told you guys my TikTok for class, but it's at Mezzin_around. And then my consultancy where I'm working with athletes in their career transition and doing a lot of my research is Grit and Glue. So it's Grit and Glue on Twitter, and I think it's _grit_glue_ on Instagram. So I got to spruce up my content more on Grit and Glue side, but that's where you can follow me on all those spots.
We'll definitely link it up. Check it out. Follow along with Caleb. He's someone I've been lucky to learn from for several years now, doing stuff with teaching, with Grit and Glue, with Beyond Baseball, the podcast now, and just cannot thank you enough. I've treasured our relationship over the years. I look forward to several years more together. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, Caleb.
Neil, happy to be here. I know we have a lot more to talk about, so we'll have to schedule our next conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much again to Caleb Mezzi, assistant professor for sport management and business and at Newman University. There's so much good stuff that he can provide us. He can pick his brain all day in a number of areas. Really cool listening to hear him talking about Mamba mentality. Excited to hear of the Beyond Baseball podcast, these great conversations with athletes that are making that transition that he has studied, that he has helped other athletes do. There's so much good information coming from Caleb, and you can continue to follow along with everything that he's doing. And keep an eye out for everything Grit and Glue as well. So again, thank you to Caleb as we just get the school year started here in 2022, 2023, for sharing us some of his time, information, knowledge, wisdom, and energy today. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find me on LinkedIn, connect with me there, where I post more content. On Twitter, of course, at NJH287. The website, as always, is DSMSports.net. And follow along, subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. Until next time, this is Neil Horwitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.